Now we arrive at the gospel, which sets the tone for everything else, huh? And why we had what we had in the first reading, somewhat in the second reading, and now we're back in the gospel. And this is Luke 14, 25 to 33. Great crowds were traveling with Jesus, and he turned and addressed them. I think it says strophes. Yes, he turned around. Implied, but it's nice. He turned around and talked to them. See? And he says, if anybody comes to me without hating his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. I have to be first. Why? Well, it's just common sense. I'm your eternal beatitude. If I'm not first, you don't have beatitude. It's that simple. And I know who's first because I'm God. But I acted out my firstness by climbing on that cross, stark naked and mocked and in pain for 3 hours and died feeling even abandoned by my Father. I deserve to be first. Not only because I am who I am, but because of what I've done for you. Ask yourself, am I first in your life? And that's what's happening here, you see. If anyone comes to me without hating his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Hating meaning, make him second. I'm first. But I'll promise you that if you put me first, I can instruct you on how to live the right way in your family. You'd be much better as a father or a mother, as a child, or whoever you are in that family, you'll be much better if you've given your life to me and I can guide you. I know what it is to live in a family. I was a child in the family of Joseph and Mary, and I honored them and obeyed them, as St. Luke explicitly tells you, and he was subject to them, it says. And so, that's the, one of the requirements, okay? Then, whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. If you're ducking the stuff that can sanctify you, you're in trouble. That's what he's saying, see? Who doesn't take up his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. And now he's going to say, now, you want to be my disciple? Think about it. What does he say then? You see? Which of you, wishing to construct a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if there is enough for its completion? Otherwise, after laying the foundation and finding himself unable to finish the work, the onlookers should laugh at him and say, this one began to build, but he did not have the resources to finish. Or what king, marching into battle, would not first sit down and decide whether with 10,000 troops he could successfully oppose another king advancing upon him with 20,000 troops? But if not, while he was still far away, he will send a delegation to ask for peace terms. In the same way, every one of you who does not say goodbye to all his possessions cannot be my disciple. Now the text, the word, apostasite, in the Greek, you see, is renounce is the way it's often translated. It's not renounce, like give up. It's say goodbye. Goodbye. I'm just not going to hang around with you anymore. What are you going to do with it? Well, if I got millions, I'm going to give some of it away, and I'm going to make sure my family is taken care of, and I'm going to administer what I have in justice and in subjection to the Lord. But if I got billions, I might as well give some away. I mean, what are you going to do with money anyway? Which is one of the things we had in the first reading. You can buy clothes and food and travel. Then what? It's security. Something goes wrong, I always got the money. Something goes wrong, you've always got the Lord. And he's more precious than money and more reliable. And that's why it says here, you see, anybody who does not carry his own cross and come after me, huh? And then up further, when he says this about renouncing, you see, and the word for renounce is the last line. Every one of you who does not renounce, real translation, and I think some of the, I didn't look at the other English translations, would be, say goodbye. Bye-bye. I don't need you. I'll give you away. Now, some people have actually done this in a remarkable way. And they're happy. I know some. They're happy people. And they know what their life is all about. And their kids look up to them. Because, first place, they did a great and noble thing. And secondly, they're not harassed all day about money, 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 money. So when they get home, they can hardly be civil to their family. So this is very important, you see. Now, everyone who does not renounce, you know, and I said, really say goodbye to all his possessions. I'll tell you, I may have told you this before. This is a gospel, and it's on this 23rd Sunday after Pentecost now? 23rd Sunday after Pentecost. So it's in September sometime, usually. I was driving up to the parish where I helped out, and still help out in sometimes. And the gospel is this one. And I'm saying, Lord, how can I possibly preach on who does not renounce all his possessions, can't be my disciple? These people have homes and children to raise and to take care of. And how can I make sense of this? Now, I could just skip it, you know, and they'd all be happy if I skipped it. But I wouldn't be honest, because you said it. So what does it mean? I'm driving along in the car, praying, and the Lord, with his characteristic kindness, very calmly said, look, obviously I know that they have children to raise, to educate, to feed. You know, they have to live a life. What do I mean? And that's why say goodbye is better than renounce. You see, they have to put me first and ask me what I want them to do with their money. That's what I want. I can tell them. Now, I might be a little more generous than they want to be, but if they'll obey me, I can promise them they will always have peace. They will always have children who admire them and look up to them because they're following and listening to me, and they're teaching their children to do it. And that's what it means to say goodbye. It's not mine, it's yours, Jesus. Just tell me how you want me to use it. We were going to buy a new sofa. Do you think, you know, I should do that with that money? And the Lord might say, I would, yeah. I mean, you know, the one you got there is 30 years old. You ought to pitch it and get another one. You have a family to sit on it. Or you might say, you just got the other one 2 years ago. Why don't you take that money and give it to the poor? But you've submitted your life to the Lord. And you say, well, I'm afraid he's going to be tougher on me than I'd be on myself. That's a legitimate fear. But he's going to do more for you than you could ever do for yourself in this world and in the next. Peace, friends, confidence, and finally, the very vision of God himself is worth it. And so this teaching on wealth ends with this radical statement here, which is the last verse here, verse 23 of this chapter 14. In the same way, every one of you who does not say goodbye to all his possessions cannot be my disciple. Why? Because your money is ahead of me. I can't tell you what to do with your money because you're going to do exactly what you want so you can be safe. And then in your spare time, you're going to go to church and say, oh, Jesus, I love you and all the rest. And you probably live a pretty good life. But you can't be my disciple until you put me first. Not comfort, not money, not food, not anything. I got to be first. And I'll promise you that if you put me first, I'll put you first. I'll take care of you. And I will give you peace and I'll give you family peace, and I'll guide you in this world into the next, and your children after you. I promise you that. You see, I can take care of you. But if you're going to take all that stuff and keep it under your own control, there's nothing I can do for you, except keep urging you to cut it out. Say goodbye. That means just surrender it to me. Lord, what do you want me to do with my money? What do you want me to do? You see? Now, he's going to be more generous to the poor than you were, but he's going to be more generous to you than you can be to yourself. It's a two-way street. And that's why he says these things, you see? So, if you want to be my disciple, think about it. Don't be like a guy who starts to build a swimming pool in his backyard and he runs out of money halfway through, so there's this great big hole in his backyard and everybody's laughing at him. Figure out whether you can finish the job before you start getting the bulldozer in here to, you know, make a big hole and then not be able to finish the job. You see, if anyone comes to me without hating his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, even his own life, I got to be first. He can't be my disciple. But if we put him first, oh, my Lord, just read the saints. The happiest people in the whole world. I'm just about finished the diary of St. Faustina Kowalska. You ought to read it if you haven't. It is so beautiful. She suffered a lot. But why? To spread the mercy of God in this world. And when Karol Wojtyła, as the bishop, got the hold of this manuscript, the theologians were saying, oh, she's talking like she thinks she's God. Remember, she was very unschooled. You've got to have, like, X-ray eyes to go through her Polish, I guess. But the translators have done that now. You see? He said, this woman has been entrusted with a message for the church about God's mercy and about re-honoring the mercy on a Sunday right after Easter. The Lord has told her that, and we're going to start with that. When he got to be Pope, he instituted the Feast of Mercy Sunday. Mercy. The way to preach is mercy, but truth. It's not merciful to obscure the truth if we're preaching. It's not. People will love you, slap you on the back, invite you over for supper, but you haven't done them any good. Nor do you do good when you shout and scream and tell them they're terrible and they got to shape up and blah, blah, blah. Look at the way Jesus does it. With love, encouragement, promises. You see? And that way, you see, so the Lord's saying, think about it. If you want to be my disciple, it's going to cost you something. I'm urging you to do it. You'll be happier than anything you can imagine. And then you'll have all you need. You'll have me. And I will take care of your family. So trust me. And let us be happy to be with each other. And putting me first and consulting me on all your expenditures. Ask me, do I need a new car? Do I need a new sofa? This university's three times more than the others, but it'll get my son a better job. Is it really worth it? Not if he's going to lose his faith. Ask the Lord these things. Amen.